Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jonathan Liss, and I've been closely tracking the ETF space for more than 13 years through a variety of roles here at SeekingAlpha.com. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investing goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of the individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Welcome back to Let's Talk ETFs. Brief note on this episode. I think it perfectly encapsulates just how quickly markets and pretty much anything can turn on a dime. When I had the conversation that makes up today's episode just 3 short weeks ago with Vincent Yip, today's guest, his thesis that the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the ETF that tracks it, DIA, would start meaningfully outperforming the NASDAQ 100 and S&P 500 had not yet started to take place. Pretty much as soon as we recorded, though, a shift in market leadership started to occur, with the Dow handily outperforming other major U.S. benchmarks since mid-February. If nothing else, it's a reminder that as investors, we sometimes need to stick to our guns and wait until a thesis that makes total sense actually plays out. A strategy, say growth or momentum, works until it doesn't, and that may be what we're seeing take place in markets before our very eyes. One other brief note, the technology unfortunately doesn't always cooperate as much as we'd like it to, and there were some audio issues that you may notice during today's episode. We tried to clean those up as much as possible. Want to give a shout out to Michael Lipkin, who does all of the post-production on these shows, and he's really been doing a terrific job on them. Next week, we'll hope to get this absolutely perfect. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed today's show.
For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the morning of Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. My guest today is Vincent Yip, portfolio manager at Wing Capital Investments. You hopefully remember Vincent from episode number 45 of this show from June 2020, diversifying away from China, the long case for Vietnam. Vincent's call there is already up 25%, but I remain incredibly bullish on the move away from Chinese supply chains into places like Vietnam. We'll see if Vincent still feels the same way shortly. We'll get an update on that in addition to discussing his recent Seeking Alpha piece, DIA Time for the Dow to Shine This Year. Vincent received a bachelor's in computer science from the University of Waterloo and a master's in financial mathematics from NYU. He became a CFA charter holder in 2017, working at multiple investment banks in New York and Tokyo before starting Wing Capital with several partners back in 2016. He is currently based in Tokyo. A word on Wing Capital Investments. They have been Seeking Alpha contributors since 2016, laying out their buy, sell, and hold theses on dozens of exchange-traded funds. Anyway, let's get into it. Welcome back to the show, Vincent.
Thank you, Jonathan, for having me again.
Sure. And anyway, you were just telling me before the show that you had some good news since we last spoke, birth of your son. So first of all, congratulations on that. That's always great.
Really appreciate it. Yeah, it's a big change in my life, but it's very exciting.
Yeah. And hopefully you got some sleep last night. So you'll be cogent during this conversation. Always good and only good things, hopefully.
Yeah, I also want to say thank you for all the great work that you do for the past, since I started following you, and the great content that you continue to deliver to listeners, and most recently about GameStop and active ETFs. I think they're very topical and highly recommend.
Yeah, thanks, Vincent. Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'm really excited you were able to rejoin me so soon. You've made some really excellent calls recently, and we're going to get into your recent pick of DIA and maybe not that ETF or index specifically, but the broader thesis around why you feel that the DIA and the Dow Jones is likely to outperform peers like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 in the coming, I don't know, months, years. I don't know if we want to put an exact time frame on it. But before we get into that, I'm sure listeners will want to get an update on your take on Vietnam, which is the VanEck Vectors Vietnam ETF, considering it's moved up, I think, about 25% since our conversation. Maybe it's, I looked that up last week, it's been down a bit of late, so maybe it's up 20% and change since we spoke in June. And I think it's up more like 30 or 35% since your original call, where it was around $12. And just FYI, I'm a long VNM at this point. Also, I got in at around 14, maybe a month after our conversation. So I guess let's get started with that. Are you still as bullish on VNM as you were? And how do you feel the story has evolved since we last spoke?
Yes, I'm still bullish on VNM because the VNM economy is most likely will continue to benefit from a lower economic recovery and just a long-term weaker US dollar. But then one thing I want to mention is that, so I actually changed. So after the U.S. presidential election, I didn't mention in the previous podcast, but we actually assumed a re-election of President Trump. To be very, very clear, we're not taking a political view, but just statistically speaking, the incumbent had a better shot than the challenger in usual times. But obviously, a lot of things happened in those 6 months and the pandemic and whatnot. So now we have a new administration, new political climate. So there'll be resets in relationships between US, China, and the others. And so the whole supply chain relocation, most likely for now, is in the backseat. So because the focal point right now is the whole vaccine rollout, the global economy recovering, driven by the trillions of stimulus. So I think it's all about the money flowing and flowing into emerging markets as a whole, the resale environment. And China obviously has been a big winner, reflecting the currency and stock market. But I think as a whole, the complex, emerging market complex, would have a good year, including VNM. So like the one that we had from 2008, right after, like when we had a global economic recovery. So in terms of our positioning, yes, our managed accounts are still long, VNM, but actually rotated partially from that position into IEMG, the benchmark against the MSCI emerging markets. So effectively, we're taking more of a beta approach on emerging markets. We're still on the VNM, but we also want to take advantage of the other emerging markets also having a great year.
Yeah, makes total sense. And we actually discussed IEMG on the show several weeks back with another Seeking Alpha contributor, Books Research. He made that call. And I'm also actually long IEMG. I think it's probably the best way to play emerging markets, just in terms of how many different holdings the fund has and the fact that it only charges 11 basis points. So obviously a lot of reasons to be in there. But yeah, I'm also long VNM. So my bigger position is obviously in IEMG, but I do think it makes sense just because of how large a holding China is in IEMG to continue to play the eventuality that supply chains are going to move away from China. They just have to. I think the pandemic has put the world into that situation where everyone needs more diversified supply chains. So I think it does make sense. And as you say, maybe it pushes the thesis back a bit, but I think over, you know, the next half a decade or decade, it's still something that we're going to see play out. So yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So over to the main conversation here. You published a piece on January 19th of this year titled DIA, Time for the Dow to Shine This Year, in which you made the case for why you expected the Dow Jones Industrial Average to outperform other key benchmark US benchmark indexes, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 this year and perhaps beyond, after lagging for pretty much a decade. So before we get into the meat of your thesis here, I'd love to just discuss the Dow Jones Industrial Average more broadly, as it's somewhat of a strange index. What can you tell people about the Dow Jones Industrial Average? Really one of the oldest stock market indexes, goes all the way back to 1886 and Charles Dow. And it is constructed very strangely. So I think maybe we'll start with that. How is the Dow constructed and how does it differ from pretty much every other index that's out there?
Yeah, I think Dow is the only price weighted. Correct me if I'm wrong, it's the only price weighted index.
Yeah, I was looking that up actually. I'm sure there are other ones out there, but I couldn't find any that anybody actually invests in at the
So instead of using the market cap, you use the stock price, which is strangely why we do they would do that. I'm not sure, but probably as you said, it's a very old index. The Dow is made of 30 stocks and it's weighted based on the stock price. There was actually a makeover last August, but before that, there have been quite many changes over the past few years because it's weighted by stock price. When the stock price dropped by a lot, you know, like back in 2016, Boeing had a really, really high weight because of this explosive. That's one of the strangest of the Dow is that when the stock price goes a lot higher, then the way will change a lot, move a lot higher for the stock. So I think that's the strangest part about the Dow.
Yeah, and so the Dow, I just looked it up, the Dow Jones Transportation Index is also price-weighted, and that's actually the oldest index. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is the second oldest, dating back to 1886, created by Charles Dow, who is the then editor of the Wall Street Journal and co-founder of Dow Jones and Company, which was acquired by S&P Global in 2011, a decade ago. So just, I guess, to harp on the strangeness here a little bit, because this is a price-weighted index, things shake out as follows. So in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100, Apple is the largest holding because it's the largest market cap company in the world. And so and in the US in particular, so it's the largest holding there. When you look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the largest holding is actually United Healthcare. And that's because it has a share price of more than $330. So it's 7% of the index. Apple's not even in the top 10 because after its split several years back, it dropped to 100. I think it dropped to about $70 a share after the split. And it's doubled since then. It's up to 140 at this point. But that means because of price weighting, it's just 2.9% of the index. Furthermore, you end up with companies like Amazon and Google that have massive share prices that are simply not considered for inclusion, because if you put Amazon with its, I don't know, who even knows what Amazon's trading for these days. I'm going to look it up right now. But
what is it?
Yeah, it's $3,300. So you can do the math on that. If United Healthcare is $330 and it's 7%, so Amazon would have to be 70% of the index if it was included. So clearly, it's not on the table to be included. So it really a very strange index. And yet, you listen to the news or you go to any financial site, and you'll still see the Dow Jones Industrial Average as a headline index. So my first question is, it's a household name. It probably still has more name recognition, certainly than the NASDAQ 100. I think maybe even than the S&P 500, particularly for people of a certain generation. Is this index still relevant for modern investors to be considering for their portfolios?
Yeah, I mean, like in terms of being a benchmark, there's no doubt. I think the Dow is less than ideal for the reasons that we discussed. Using stock price, which doesn't really have fundamental economic value. So, and the fact that it only has 30 stocks, partly representative of the broader market and economy per se. So I'm definitely in the camp that, you know, Dow is not as relevant as a benchmark comparing to the other market cap weighted indices like S&P 500. But then I guess like, going back to our overall our article, is that our thesis is less about the methodology per se. So because we're just talking about in this particular time, we look at how the index is allocated, you know, Google because of the price, to make it as well diversified and include as many bellwether names as possible. So if you just look at the top 10 names, so you mentioned yes, United Health also 7% because of, you know, it has a higher stock price. You look at the rest of the list, it's pretty good household names, right? You have Goldman Sachs, one of the major investment banks. It's the second largest holding. You have Home Depot, Amgen, mix of growth stocks in the technology sector and also healthcare, financials. And then down the list, you have Boeing and Honeywell Industries. And then you have Visa and McDonald's as well. So these are household names that I think most Americans should know. And so which is why I think there's still some relevance in the index, even though there's so much of this strangeness in the methodology and how the benchmark. I think they're still doing what they can to make it as relevant as possible.
Yeah, sure. And of course, you've got Chevron in there also. And of course, the S&P 500 is fully diversified across sectors. The NASDAQ 100, though, is certainly not. So first of all, it's X financials. And that's an important point to keep in mind. And the NASDAQ 100 is also incredibly underweight energy stocks. And so certainly, I think that the X financials and underweight energy is a great reason for the NASDAQ 100's outperformance over the last decade. But at some point, a rotation happens and it ends up underperforming. And so in many ways, even though it only has 30 holdings and it has this strange price weighted methodology, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is actually better diversified than an index like the NASDAQ 100 with 100 holdings, which is simply leaving out entire sectors. So I think worth keeping in mind for investors. So let's get into the thesis a little bit here and cue this up with the underperformance of the Dow Jones and the ETF that tracks it, DIA. Just how bad has the underperformance been relative to the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100? And when's the last time DIA actually outperformed those indexes?
So first of all, if we compare QQQ, as you said, it's not financial, it's heavily tilted towards tech sector. First of all, QQQ outperformed DIA for the past 5 years, hands down, which consistently had really strong performance year after year. But if we get into the DIA versus SPY, I think it's a bit more interesting comparison. So from 2016, also actually the DIA had outperformed the SPY for a couple of years. So from 2016 until 2018, and that's mainly because of, you know, once again, back to the strangeness of the Dow is when you have like the stock price of a particular, you know, name in the index exploding to really, really high number, like the Boeing back then. Then you have United Healthcare, Apple before this. So these top names had really strong performances between 2016 and 2018, and that helped the DIA outperform. But then from the beginning of 2019, that tide has turned for the Dow, which started lagging behind SPY. And that underperformance actually accelerated during the pandemic this last year because of two main drivers, and one being the tech sector taking off, making higher highs. And at the same time, cyclical stocks like financials and industrials, they're mired in bear markets and semiconductors. So it's really a double whammy effect that to DIA really underperforming the SPY. So if you look at the chart of the DIA versus SPY ratio, which is really is a convenient way to track the relative performance, we see that the ratio, DIA-SPY ratio, has dropped lower since the 2000s. Yes, but if you don't mind, I actually want to go a bit further back. So we talk about, not just the 5 years, 2016. So because there are two periods, which I think is pretty interesting, worth mentioning, 2000s, when the Dow outperformed the SPY, is from 2000 to 2006. There's one thing in common between those two periods, from 2000 to 2006, that the top sector in the S&P 500 had really strong momentum, like the tech sector right now, so for a couple of years. Then had really heavy allocation, heavier and heavier by the year, and then started losing steam and underperforming severely. And from that point on, so from 2000 to 2006, that would start outperforming SPY for companies. So specifically back in 2000, obviously dot-com bubble. So the tech sector at one point shot up to about more than 20% of the index, and the financial sector also more than 20% back in 2006. And when that momentum stopped, the Dow started making grounds versus the S&P 500. So I'm not trying to say this is the same as 2006. Obviously, back then, those two periods were beginning of bear markets, whereas today, we're actually in a continuation phase. But then the thing I want to emphasize is that when a sector, like the tech sector, has so much momentum for a couple of years, when that starts turning and underperforming, there's a very good chance that the DI will start outperforming the SPY. I think this is the year that there's a high chance of that happening.
Yeah, sure. I think there's a lot of logic to that, a lot of sense to it. We'll see if the markets actually agree, because clearly so far it's just been a race higher for tech in particular. So your argument here has two different prongs to it, and I'd like to start with the first, and that is the Dow Jones Transportation Index. Why does that index's breakout bode well for DIA's performance? And if you can get into historical examples here, what sorts of market environments has this happened in the past where a breakout in the Dow Jones Transportation Index prefaced a breakout in the Dow Jones Industrial Average?
Right. So really just by experience, we noticed that the Dow Jones Transportation Index is a pretty reliable barometer of the broader stock market. And for that reason, we like to track the IYT ETF, which is really is the benchmark against the Dow Jones Transportation. What we notice is that when IYT participate in a market rally, along with the rest of the market, it tends to be a bullish signal. And on the other hand, when, for example, the DIA started making higher highs, while the IYT started declining, that's a negative divergence and usually is a warning signal. And that actually happened last year, just before the pandemic. And we know what happened after. So it's really one of the main components of the Dow theory, which suggests that both industrial and transportation indices must confirm an uptrend together for that to be a true uptrend. I guess the rationale for that is that the transportation names like the railroads and the airlines, they're much more sensitive to this state of the economy. So when they started going higher together, this usually is a good sign about the underlying strength of the economy. And that bullish confirmation is precisely what we witnessed in November 2020. Is that both Dow indices broke out together to record highs together. And historically, this only happens several times. And most recently, back in late 2016. The other times, farther back, was 2006, also in 1998, and both of which were in the middle of bull market runs. And so generally speaking, the breakout in IYT and DIY, I mean, I'm sorry, IYT and DIA together tend to happen during a global economic recovery or in an acceleration phase.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Interestingly, I'm just looking at IYT and the top holdings of that index, and you've got FedEx as the top holding, more than 12%, and UPS as the fifth largest at close to 8%. Of course, you've got a lot of railroads and airlines in here, and they've obviously not done quite as well, but at least those two shipping companies, I think, have kind of led the way for this index, because in a global recession, certainly one that's caused by people's need to order and send things all over the world, obviously shipping giants are going to do well in that environment. But I think seeing the breakout in the rest of the in the rest of the holdings there, so again, the railroads and the airlines would point to a serious rotation away from the kinds of stocks that have led SPY and QQQ higher. So moving on to the second prong of your argument, and this one to me is the one that I think is more salient, and that is the sector composition of DIA and how that differs from SPY or QQQ. Why does this set DIA up for success in this type of macro environment?
Right. So, I mean, as much as we were talking about the strangeness or the pitfalls of the index, I think the sector composition of DIA, the Dow 30, is pretty well balanced, right? If you look at how it's being allocated, so we have 15 to 19% allocated for each of technology, financials, healthcare, industrials, consumer cyclicals. Basically, well diversified, right? Just on a high level. And the same can be said when you look at the top 10 holdings, which I was talking about. You have a good mix of growth names like Microsoft, Salesforce, and you have also cyclical stocks like Home Depot and Goldman Sachs. That well balancedness, I think, is well positioned for this current phase of the macro environment, which is, but versus, let's say, the SPY and the QQQ, like we were talking about, When you look at the top 10, it's really the usual suspects, that is big tech and the Tesla. Percentage-wise, it's 33% in SPY and 62% in the QQQ. So, I mean, essentially, the SPY and QQQ are like a momentum strategy, right? Increasingly overweight, and that strategy worked very well. The question really is going forward, is it going to happen again? Is the tech sector going to have another explosive year relative to the rest of the market? And our thesis is that it's most likely not. Not to say the tech sector will suddenly crash, right? Like in the dot-com bubble, but we just anticipate the other sectors like financials, industries to really step up to the plate and be the leaders in a classic economic recovery. So, I mean, on a high level, DIA has more than 50% in safe sectors. And given this macro environment, it's really set up to be the year for DIA to outshine the others for a change. Hasn't happened yet, but it's a long year, so we shall see how that plays out.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I personally, I was incredibly long QQQ coming out of the global financial meltdown in 2008 and 2009. And I've actually, over the last year and change, it's probably hurt my overall performance a bit, but I've added a fair amount of VOO, which is the Vanguard S&P 500. Mm-hmm. I've also added VLUE, which has more of a tilt towards value. You're going to end up with more energy and financials in there. I still am long the QQQ. I don't really want to harvest those gains because I'm up so many hundreds of percent on it, but I'm not plowing money into it at this point. I'm trying to diversify away. And it brings me to my next question here. And that is, say somebody likes the general thesis here, and that is there's going to be a rotation into the kind of holdings in DIA, into financials, into healthcare. Obviously, healthcare has done pretty well already, into consumer cyclicals. What are other ways that you would recommend playing this trend, assuming somebody doesn't want something that only has 30 holdings in it like DIA or that isn't market cap weighted? What would you recommend there? What other kinds of things are you looking at?
Yeah, Jonathan. So as you said, at the end of the day, DIA only has 30 stocks, and probably that's the reason why it hasn't played out yet. But it's just honestly not a good representation of the entire market. So I would say, actually, yeah, I think I have a better ETF for playing out this thesis, which actually already has a head start, which is the equal-weighted S&P 500 ETF. The symbol is RSP, which has a very similar sector exposure, around, again, 15 to 18, 19% in financials, technologies, healthcare, industrials, consumer cyclicals. And in addition, RSP has a higher allocation to energy sector, about 5%. It's not a huge amount, but compared to the Dow, compared to the DIA, actually what happened in the rebalancing last August is that they decided to remove ExxonMobil right before the massive rally in the energy sector. So probably that's one of the reasons why this thesis actually hasn't worked out yet, because they couldn't participate in the gains from the energy stock. So, actually DIA only has about 1% Chevron, I think. So, the energy sector. So I think RSP has actually a better, even more well-diversified exposure compared to DIA. And it's probably better positioned to play out this thesis. And I actually mentioned RSP already had a head start because the RSP actually outperformed SPY in the past 6 months.
Sure. And to be clear about RSP here, this is what's generally referred to as a smart beta or a factor fund. So it's got the same 500 holdings as the S&P 500, but it's equally weighted, which means you're playing the size premium. You're tilting away from mega caps towards the smaller holdings in the S&P 500 by weighting holding number 500 in the same way as you are holding number one, Apple. So Apple and Microsoft will be equally weighted with a Viacom or a Biomed or Alexion Pharmaceuticals, just looking at some of the top holdings here. And so it's also a play, certainly people that have been keeping an eye on the Russell 2000 have seen just the crazy breakout that that index has been in lately. That rotation does seem to be real as people have gotten back into the kinds of companies that they were afraid simply may have gone belly up a year ago when the whole COVID meltdown started. But at this point, those companies simply have not performed as well. And the thinking is that they it's time for them to take the lead again. So yeah, RSP, very interesting choice here. I believe there is also a NASDAQ 100 equal weighted fund out there. But the thing is, you're not going to end up with those allocations to, yeah, so it's QQEW and QQQE. Those are the First Trust NASDAQ 100 equal weight ETF and the Direction Shares NASDAQ 100 equal weight ETF. The thing is, you still end up with no allocation to energy or financials in those NASDAQ 100 equal weighted indexes. Whereas in the case of RSP, you get allocation to everything, but again, turns it on its head there. So very interesting selection and something we're definitely going to be keeping an eye on. Anyway, Vincent, I want to thank you so much. This has been great as always. I always look forward to your pieces on Seeking Alpha. Always very thought-provoking and interesting fund ideas. And I like that you get down to brass tacks also and make actual recommendations and don't just write theoretically about macro conditions. So that's definitely something that I enjoy.
Thank you for your feedback. And about the trade recommendation, the past couple of months, not too hot per se. you were talking about the Russell 2000. I was actually saying, hey, it's too fast, too furious. But actually, it's not too fast, too furious. It's just about, it's still a way to go, right?
I think so. I mean, I don't think it's as overbought as the NASDAQ 100 or tech is right now. So,
yeah. So the thing is that we mix in with long-term trade ideas with short-term trades that are more for portfolio hedges or option trades that trying to sell premium and in various ETFs. But sometimes you just try to be too cute or try to be too smart. And that's usually when it's overbought, it's probably not overbought yet.
So yeah.
Sometimes it's always lesson learned every time.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess before you go here, if you want to just remind listeners where the best place to find you online is, where the best place is to read your research.
Yeah. So just follow us on Seeking Alpha on the Wayne Capital Investments handle. So yeah, I try to write on a weekly basis. So I do more of my research for internal distribution, but then I try to keep it up on a weekly basis to share my thoughts and to be able to connect to people like you and others who want to have valuable conversations. I'm really, really very grateful to be able to meet you and to be able to come on this show. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. I will we'll definitely get you back on again in not too long.
Yeah. Hopefully by then, the DIA and SC can do a little bit of catch up.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Anyway, thanks again, Vincent, and we'll speak
soon. Thank you very much, Jonathan. All right.
For disclosures, Vincent Yip and Wing Capital are long VNM, IEMG, SPY, and are long the Dow Jones Industrial Average via futures. I, Jonathan Liss, am long IEMG, VNM, VOO, QQQ, and VLUE. If you've been enjoying Let's Talk ETFs, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And if you find this podcast useful, please consider leaving a review on one of those platforms so that other investors can discover it. You can also find this podcast on SeekingAlpha.com by typing Let's Talk ETFs into the search bar at the top of the site.